God, Matthew chapter 14, beginning at verse 13. As soon as Jesus heard the news, he left in a boat to a remote area to be alone. But the crowds heard where he was headed and followed on foot from many towns. Jesus saw the huge crowd as he stepped from the boat, and he had compassion on them and healed their sick. That evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place, and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy food for themselves." But Jesus said, "That isn't necessary. You feed them." "But we only have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here," he said. Then he told the people to sit down on the grass. Jesus took the 5 loaves and 2 fish, looked up toward heaven, and blessed them. Then, breaking the loaves into pieces, he gave the bread to the disciples, who distributed it to the people. They all ate as much as they wanted, and afterward, the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftovers. About 5,000 men were fed that day, in addition to all the women and children. Immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. After sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there alone. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them walking on the water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost!" But Jesus spoke to them at once. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage. I am here." Then Peter called to him, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water." "Yes, come," Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water toward Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. "Lord, save me," he shouted. Immediately Jesus reached out and grabbed him. "You have so little faith," Jesus said. "Why did you doubt me?" When they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped. Then the disciples worshipped him. "You really are the Son of God," they exclaimed. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. A Christ sufficient for all our needs. The luster of his love never lessens. The prowess of his power never perishes. The wisdom of his word never wanes. The fountain of his fullness never fails. The burnish of his beauty never blemishes. A Christ sufficient for all our needs. Imagine, if you will, with me for just a minute or two, that you are hearing this story for the first time. And you got the setup, and you hear Jesus fed 5,000 men, plus the women, plus the children, with nothing more than a McDonald's Happy Meal, and then he walked on water? Come on! Well, let's start with that. Because all 4 Gospels tell this story. All 4 Gospels tell the story of the crucifixion. All 4 Gospels tell the story of the resurrection. So these must be vital, important stories. Matthew 14, Mark 6, Luke 9, John 6 all tell this story. So let's look at it as it's reported to us. John the Baptist had been beheaded. He was the forerunner. He was the one who set the way. He's the one who said, there's one coming after me whose shoes I'm not worthy to untie. And now for daring to preach righteousness to the head of the government, telling him you're an adulterer, you're living in adultery. He was arrested, he was put in prison, and he was executed. And seeing that, Jesus takes his disciples to withdraw for a time. Reflect, rest, recapture strength. And the crowd sees him go. This happens every time. Jesus wants to get away for a few days to pray, to be alone with his disciples and to pray to God the Father. Oh, there he goes. Let's follow him. And the word spreads. And by the time Jesus gets to the spot they had appointed to go to for rest, the crowd's there. He steps off the boat. He sees the crowd. And he does what he always does. He starts to minister. And he heals and he teaches and he ministers. And the day goes on and the sun is getting low in the sky, and one of the disciples comes over and says, Jesus, it's getting late. We're out here in the middle of nowhere. They've been here all day. Send them away into the villages so they can get something to eat. Well, remember, this is a crowd of 5,000. Men, plus women, plus children. If they all go into town, they're going to wipe out the grocery store. They're going to take out every bit of food in the Kroger or the Walmart. And Jesus looks at his disciples and he says, we don't need to send them away. You give them something to eat. And what he's going to do is build on their faith. It's a weak faith. But he's going to build on their faith. He's going to stretch them. Well, John tells us that Andrew finds a little boy who offered his lunch. Here, sir, I have this. And he gives him a lunch that has 5 loaves, probably not as big as a hamburger roll, made of the cheapest wheat, the barley. Cheapest flour, the barley, and 2 little dried fish. They would have opened them up, they would have cleaned them out, they would have salted them to preserve them, and that's his lunch. That's the best he has. And skeptics say that everybody had brought food. They brought their picnic baskets, they had it tucked in their pockets, they had it in the folds of their garments. And they were keeping it back, and when they saw this little boy give this little bit of a lunch, they were so embarrassed by their selfishness that they brought it all out and they had potluck and they had dinner on the grounds. Well, you buy that if you want to. I'm going to stick with the way the story was told, because John in his Gospel, chapter 1, verse 3 says, all things were made by him, by Jesus, and without him was not anything made that was made. And if he can make the sun, and he can make the moon, and he can make the stars, and he can make our world, and he can make this entire universe, he can take 5 little pieces of bread and 2 little fish and feed as many people as need to be fed. And he takes it, and he lifts it up, and he blesses it, and he breaks it. And I don't know what happens from here. Maybe when he breaks it, it multiplies in his hand as he gives it to the disciples and he just keeps passing it out. Or maybe as he gives it to them, it multiplies in their hands and they just keep passing it out. But whatever, they sit down in order, they sit down in rank, it's done decently and in order, and when it's all over, they're all fed. And there are 12 baskets full of leftovers. Evidently not little bitty pieces, not bits and pieces, but enough for many more meals. 12 full baskets. And the ripple runs through. No one can do this, not even Jesus. 12 baskets full. 12 baskets full. 12 disciples with not much faith. one basket full of leftovers for every disciple? Or all 12 baskets given back to the little boy to prove you can't outgive God? He has the best he has. It's not the best of the best, but it's the best he has, and he gives it to God. To God the Son. You can't outgive God. It was meager quality and meager quantity. And so many times we say, it's all I have. I can't do any better. And how many times have we said, well, I can't do anything but pray? Kind of dismissing it, passing it off, passing off prayer as not being much. I heard a minister ask a congregation, if you stopped praying, would it radically change your life? And then he asks, you say no. Well, if you say no, why then do you bother to pray at all? We downgrade who Jesus is and who we are in Jesus so many times. Bonnie will remember this. There was a man in the church in Erie, Pennsylvania, the second church we served, who came to me after service one day and said, preacher, I'm going to have to leave the church. The financial burden is just too great. And it was a heavy burden. I just can't bear up to it. I can't stand up to it. I'm going to have to leave the church. And for the first time in my ministry, only one of two times I've ever done this, I asked the treasurer to see the books. Now, as pastor, I could have seen the books any time, any place, as often as I wanted to. I just didn't do it. I did ask, if somebody starts tithing, I'd like to know. If somebody stops tithing, I'd like to know. Because there's something spiritual going on in both of those cases. But this time, I asked to look at the books just to check the giving records. And this man, who said the financial burden is too great, I have to quit church, but he's offering in an envelope, the treasury recorded it faithfully week after week, long before I got there. And he gave every week 25 cents. Stressed by his generous giving. Downgrading Jesus, who he is and who we are in him. One church we served, I was a bivocational pastor. The church had a salary. It wasn't a big salary, and I had a job to make up ends. And I worked in a print shop. And the man who owned the print shop was a believer. And one day we were talking about giving. And he says, we shovel into God's bin, and God shovels back into our bin, and God has a bigger shovel than we do, opening the windows of heaven to receive the blessings. We shovel in, God shovels back, and he has a bigger shovel. And he had another expression about giving that I like too. You know, the verse that says, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. Well, he said, God puts big strawberries on the bottom of the basket as well as on the top of the basket. And David in Psalm 37 said, I was young, now I'm old, and I've never seen the righteous forsaken nor his seed begging bread. Hungry? Maybe. In trouble? Possibly. Forsaken? Never. Have you ever tried to outgive God? When Bonnie and I were first married, we attended the Williamsport, Maryland Church of God. And we loved our pastor. And one day he came to me and said, David, I have a financial need. I'd like you to pray with me about it. And I said, sure. And I took out my wallet. And my wallet was a $20 bill on Lent. Now, we made $600 a month teaching school. It was big money. Not so much money, but for us it was big money. And there's a $20 bill in my wallet, and that's it, and it's about a week and a half till payday. And I took it out and gave it to him, and he started crying. He said, David, that's exactly what I needed. Well, I went home. And I have a pigeonhole desk. I still have it. That our dad made. Kyle remembers that desk. Kathy remembers that desk. And I don't know what I was looking for in that desk, but I was looking for something. And I found an envelope. I didn't remember. I didn't recognize. I had no idea how it got in there. I still don't know how it got in there 50-some years later. And I opened that envelope. And inside that envelope were five $20 bills. Don't downgrade who Jesus is. Don't downgrade who you are in Jesus. Well, everybody's full. Nobody wants dessert. And Jesus sends the crowd away and tells the disciples, get in the boat. I'm going to stay here and pray for a while. And he goes up into the hill to pray. And the disciples are doing God's will. God the Son told him, get in the boat and go. How many times have we said, God, I want to know your will, and God shows us his will, and we say, could I get a second opinion? They are in God's will, and they are in trouble. The biggest lie told in Christianity is not the one that God didn't mean what he said in the Bible, that you can live, that you cannot live like hell and still go to heaven. There's a bigger lie than denominations telling people that they can disobey what God said and still be right with God. The biggest lie told in Christianity today is that when you come to Jesus, all of your troubles will be over. When you come to Jesus, you change gods. Nothing less radical. You used to serve Satan. He was your God. Now you serve Jesus. He is your God. And the God you used to serve wants you back, and the battle is on. That's why the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 7 says, I think I'm allergic to myself. The things I want to do, I don't do. The things I don't want to do, I do. I'm a battleground. I'm serving God. I'm in God's will. But I'm a battleground. Now, what's going on? John tells us that the crowd, having seen upwards of 15,000 people, maybe more, fed with a handful of food, and they intend to take Jesus by force and make him king. Look, if he can feed us with this little bit of food, Roman Empire, look out. He can overthrow the Roman Empire. We can take our country back. We can take our culture back. We can throw out Rome, and we can be free again. Make Jesus king. And the logical response of the 12 who are following Jesus would have been said, yes, let's go. Let's do it. Let's make him king. And Jesus knows they have not faced that temptation. He has. And he's going to save them from something far more serious than a storm on the lake. He's had the devil tell him, take bread. Don't trust God. Take your hunger, feed yourself. Turn these stones to bread. Don't take the long route. Jump off the temple. Angels will catch you. Hey, did you see it? We're in town, Joey. Did you see it? Jesus jumps off the temple. Angels catch him and float him down. No, I missed it. Well, it's okay. He's going to do it again at 2 o'clock. And you can circumvent faith. And third temptation was worship Satan and get all the kingdoms of the world. Just a simple genuflect. Just a simple bow of the knee. Just a simple moment of worship. And I give you all the kingdoms of the world, which Satan had the right to give because he is the prince and power of the air. Never forget, he had the ability to give that. And Jesus has faced that and overcome that. 12 disciples have not, so he puts them on the boat. They're not ready to face it. They will be, but not now. And they're in God's will, and they're in trouble because they are in God's will. And he comes to them in their hour of need, and Mark says he meant to pass them by. Meaning this wasn't going to destroy them. There is sometimes the benefit of struggle. Jesus sees what we can't. Paul told the church in Corinth a little secret about this. If you want to start a church in that part of the world in the day of the Apostle Paul, you're not going to pick Corinth to start a church. They had a saying back then. If you wanted to be rowdy, if you wanted to drink, if you wanted to go whoring, if you wanted to do anything wild and lascivious and unlawful and unruly and unmoral, you go to Corinth. It's all right there in Corinth. Corinthianize. And there's a church planted there. It's a rose in a garbage can. And Paul says to that church, chapter 10, verse 13, you can probably quote this one. God is faithful. He will not allow the temptation to be more than you can stand. Lord, I don't think I can take any more. If I take any more, I'm just going to collapse. No, God says in His Word, He will not let you have more than you can stand. When you are tempted, He will show you a way out so that you can endure. And this week I looked up the Greek for that word endure. I have not studied Greek. I use reference materials, trusted, faithful reference materials. And that word endure means to bear up from underneath, meaning the burden is already on top and you're bearing up under the burden. Hold up against, suffer evil, endure hardship, suffer injustice, endure violence, a way out so that you can endure. Sometimes there's the benefit of a struggle. And they cry out, it's a ghost. Here's that expression. No one can do this. Not even Christ. What about the 5,000 that were fed just a few hours ago? They're probably still full and their tummies are poked out with all the food they ate. No one can do this. Not even Christ. To be disappointed in Jesus is the greatest possible disappointment. You remember the disciples on the road to Emmaus. It's Easter Sunday evening. And these two men are walking back home, disciples. And they meet a man they don't recognize. The Bible says their eyes were beholden that they could not recognize him. I just wonder if he had his hands in his pockets so they couldn't see the nail scars. But they said to him, you've got to be the only guy in town who doesn't know what went on this weekend. We trusted that this Jesus, the teacher, the carpenter from Nazareth, was the one. He was the Messiah. We trusted. And there's the danger of disappointment. So, afraid and disappointed, and thinking he's going to drown, Peter says, Lord, if it's you. There are times when Jesus honored the impulsive leap of faith. There are times when he says, count the cost. No man who puts his hand to the plow and turns back is fit for the kingdom of heaven. I've just bought a bunch of animals. Let me prove them. Let the dead bury the dead. I've just married a wife. Let me take care of a year's before I come. And in each case, Jesus says, count the cost. But this time he says, come. take that leap of faith. You remember the story of Mary Magdalene? She comes uninvited into a banquet where Jesus is the guest. And she has in her hands this expensive container, and a container of expensive oil, perfume. And she breaks it, and now it's broken. You can't keep that. She's got to use it. And she anoints Jesus with this. And Judas is sitting there with his calculator, and he's figuring it out. That could have been sold for a year's wages and the money given to the poor. We could have fed the poor. We could have housed the poor. We could have taken care of the poor. He didn't care about the poor. He wanted the money in the bank because he was a thief and he was going to steal it. Well, you historians correct me on this. It was sometime in the 6th or 7th century, a pope preached a sermon in which he said Mary Magdalene was a prostitute. The Bible doesn't say she was a prostitute. At one place it said she had dealt with 7 demons. But he said she was a prostitute. Let's go with the preacher's story. Preachers say a lot of strange things sometimes. The Pope says she was a prostitute. Judas says that perfume was worth a year's wages. Now think for a minute the abuse that this woman would have put up with from her customers to have saved enough money to have bought that expensive perfume. And in a leap of faith, she gives it all to worship Jesus. You remember the four men who came with their paralyzed friend? They want Jesus to heal him. And the house is full. They're hanging in the windows. They're standing in the door. The yard is full. They don't ask permission. They go up on the house. They don't ask the owner's permission. They tear off his roof and they lower the man down in before Jesus. And all you poker players know that four of a kind beats a full house. And Jesus said, take up your mat and go home. A leap of faith. And Matthew in his gospel, it's a chapter or two different from where we read just a few minutes ago, talks about his call to ministry, leaving the seat of taxes. And it's two verses. In the New Living Translation that we read from this morning, it's 55 words. If that's written today, it's on the New York Times bestseller list. There's a slick photograph of a grinning preacher with slick back hair and bleached white teeth, and it goes on for hundreds of pages bragging on himself and how rotten he was and hardly ever mentions how good Jesus is. 55 words to leave the best job you could have had financially. It would have been a tough job on your spirit because to be a tax collector, you had to be a traitor. But once you bid on the job and got the job, you set the wages and you made as much money as you wanted to make. And Jesus comes by and he says, come follow me. Come follow me. And Matthew gets up and he leaves the seat of collection. He leaves the records. He leaves the money. And he follows Jesus in a leap of faith. Well, Peter takes his leap, and he walks on water. Only two people have ever walked on water, Jesus and Peter. And somewhere in those first few steps, he begins to think, what am I doing? And Matthew says he's beginning to sink. Beginning is probably the worst time. Water at the ankles, perhaps mid-calf. You're not bobbing under. Your head's not just bobbing up and down and you're getting water in your face. He's beginning to sink, and that's the worst time. I can handle this. I don't need any help. But Peter took his eyes off Jesus and he looked at the storm. And sometimes it's hard to look at Jesus because of the storms. I am not minimizing that. Sometimes it's hard to look at Jesus because of the storms. The autistic child. The unexpectedly pregnant wife. The straying husband. The layoffs. The bad investments. Government shutdown. No paycheck coming. Car troubles. The bills. A healing that's delayed. And Peter prays a simple powerful prayer. Lord, save me. Three words. Prayer doesn't always need volumes. Thurman asked me to pray this morning, the pastoral prayer, and I will as soon as we come to the conclusion of this talk. And it'll be more than three words. And then we're going to pray the Lord's Prayer. And the Lord's Prayer is only 68 words, including the Amen. Lord, save me. You don't need to work it up. Sometimes you need to keep praying, but you don't need to work it up. And Jesus says, oh, thou of little faith, the miracle fed your body. It had not fed your spirit. And so Jesus fed them, protected them from temptation, protected them from a life-threatening situation. A Christ sufficient for all our needs. The reservoir of His resource never recedes. A Christ sufficient for all our needs. Trust Him for now. Trust Him for the storms right now. Trust Him that He knows your need and can meet your need. The reservoir of His resource never recedes.